Hello and welcome to season three of Inside the Auditorium. Today's guest is Yasmin Dogu, who is Chief Auditor for the UK and International for RSA. From Turkey, Yasmin has carved out a strong career within the insurance industry for internal audit. Welcome, Yasmin. Hello, Yasmin. It's really great to have you here today with me. Could you please explain to our listeners who you are and where you're from?
Hi, my name is Yasmin Dogu. I'm the Chief Auditor at RSA Insurance.
And Yasmin, can you please tell me, obviously originally from Turkey, how you actually become to be the Chief Auditor at RSA and give us an overview of your career?
Sure, it's been quite a journey, and especially starting internal audit is completely by chance. But if I take a step back, I started my career more than 20 years ago in external audit in Turkey, and I haven't been involved with financial services, and I was more looking after retail clients. Then I moved into finance roles. And when I made the decision to move to the UK about 16 years ago, I found myself as the finance business partner for a big insurance firm looking after internal audit costs. So up to that time, I didn't know much about internal audit, what they do and what purpose they have. And it sparked an interest in me. I started talking to auditors and start to join their trainings. And when the opportunity came about 13 years ago, I joined internal audit. So I've been auditing the last 13 years or so and still loving it. And my journey within internal audit have kept giving me new challenges, new opportunities throughout the time. I joined RSA Insurance about 7 years ago as head of audit and promoted to chief auditor 3 years ago. So it's been step up every step of the way and learning along the journey for me.
And tell me, going, what made you sort of move from Turkey to London?
Yeah, I loved my career in Turkey, how I started, the foundations I got there. But I always wanted to be part of a bigger industry, better work-life balance, innovation. So I wanted to push myself out of my comfort zone. And that's been most of the time the story for me. From in Turkey, I started off in a small city, then I wanted to move to the big city. Then from that big city, I wanted to move to something bigger. And London was an exciting place. I came here, I had connections here, and I was young, so I was like, why not try something completely new? And I'm the first generation here, so it's been a big learning curve, but it's been very rewarding for me.
And how easy, I know I'm talking a long time ago now that you moved here, but how easy was it, you know, being from Turkey and moving to the UK, you know, especially around the bias?
It's a huge change. For me personally, language is the first barrier, getting used to the different accents and what people say and what they mean, and also the culture, how they work in an office. It took time to adjust. And I think the first couple of months and years, I was just quietly trying to blend in, not say much, not get into trouble and establish myself. I had great mentors along the way to help me, to guide me. And I remember those first days where I was kind of getting half of what is said to me. And I was watching endless like BBC shows and getting to grasp of, okay, what is this phrase? What's that about? And even like today, I'm definitely not the finished product. I'm learning new words every day. But then over time, I think I started to find my voice and started to bring my authentic self to work because I've seen the support around me to help progress. And then over time, then I started to wave the door for others as well so that we are more welcoming because I am a huge believer of diversity. So we bring different viewpoints. And it's not only by ethnicity, it's by gender, by social background. We need to be representing the society we are part of in the companies we work in. So it's very important that we open doors and we don't have that bias.
And tell me, in terms of then your, you've mentioned about your language skills and still learning now, being in such a big role that you're in, how have you been able to make yourself boardroom ready and to be able to sort of communicate and get your point of view across?
Yeah, I put a lot of effort in learning from people. So I always go into things with, okay, what can I learn from this individual? Who can I talk to before my first audit committee, for example? Before my first audit committee, I talked to quite a few chief auditors I knew in the sector, and each of them gave me different tips. And I then took them and applied to what works for my style. And I tried to learn my audience as well. What are they interested in? What adds the most value? How can I be clear and concise and put my point across? And also, how can I manage the conflict as well in a healthy way? So it was a lot of test and learn, fail and learn. But I think getting those tips along the way, role models and learning from them have been quite helpful for me.
Sure, sure. And do you still have mentors and role models now? Is this something that you will continue to have in your career?
Yes, they can't escape. So I have quite a few people that I use as phone a friend, and it challenges evolve. And now we are looking into more advanced technology, and I'm always curious on what others are doing. If we are going through an acquisition, which we had last year, I'm looking into, okay, what should I be worried about? And there are people in the market who can give me advice, who can share insights with me. So it's endless. And those individuals keep shifting as well. And it doesn't always have to be past chief auditor. Sometimes someone just at the start of their career is also as helpful, yeah, because they tell how they hear things, how they find when they start insurance, how they, what were their expectations, what was the reality. So it's just learning from everyone I can.
Sure. And you, what's actually sort of kept you, I obviously we've spoken previously, and as you say, you started in a non-audit position. What's actually sort of, what was it about internal audit you liked or has kept you in this type of role?
Yeah, initially it was just the people. It was the people I met in the company and the job they were doing. So that sparked an interest on, this looks pretty interesting. They have the bird's eye view on everything. And the second bit interesting was I start to get bored easily. So in any finance role, after a few cycles, it was becoming a bit routine. So in audit, the excitement of what am I auditing this quarter? Which subject am I going to learn about was quite exciting. And then over the years, what kept me interesting is the opportunities internal audit has given me. So I first started at a subsidiaries audit committee, have taken the key function holder role for a smaller entity. And then it helped me learn more. And then when I promoted to the chief auditor role, obviously I became part of the executive team. Then I was privy to the discussions on strategy, the challenges business is facing. And I find it's such a privileged position to see everything and to be there as their trusted advisor. I always feel I bring the corporate history as well, so I can tell them about what went wrong in the past, how we can take learnings, and also what could go wrong now. And more importantly, what can go better as well? How can we help them have a smarter control framework?
Sure. And maybe if we can talk about RSA now, we see that Ken Norgrove, the CEO, has just mentioned about the Intact brand. Perhaps you can explain to our listeners what that actually is, what that means for RSA and particularly for internal audit.
Absolutely. It's exciting times for us. So RSA Insurance had been acquired by Intact about 4 years ago. And it has gone through significant transformation. So we've taken decision to exit personal lines. We have acquired NIG PharmWeb, and we have transformed our underwriting platforms. So we have been on a journey to get closer and closer to Intact's outperformance ambitions, and now felt the right time to be truly Intact and be putting the name on the door as well. For me, for internal auditors, not much of a change, because we, from the start, worked very closely with our North America team. Our group chief auditor is there. We worked tirelessly to align. So we set our methodology. We set our audit universe from scratch, and we worked on implementing an audit tool, which enabled us to swap resources across the board, because we are speaking the same language and we are doing the same job. And we can utilize the strength, because we are not a massive internal audit function. So wherever we have the skills, we now have ability to pull those through. Really exciting times to be called Intact. It comes with responsibility as well. Hopefully we'll see the ambitions met in time as well.
Sure. And I know last time we spoke that, you know, when we were talking about your internal audit team, a number of people have actually not come from an internal audit background. And you've done quite a lot of internal mobility. What is it about those people that you, or about internal audit, that you think it was a good thing to do as a learning for them, and what type of backgrounds?
Yeah, it was interesting. When we had the first non-auditor type of hire, even the business wasn't quite ready for it. I remember hearing comments like, you hired an auditor, or like you didn't hire an accountant. But actually, some of the best auditors I've worked with over the years came from business roles. So the foundations has to be there. They need to have a strong understanding of what we stand for, what's our purpose, and also the foundations on risk and control framework. So that's a given. But again, our job is understanding the risk that the business is faced with. So if we get talent from the business, they come with that understanding and they can help drive the function forward on what really matters and what could be the most harmful. We, of course, train them and give them the tools to succeed in the role, but they give that diverse perspective to us. We had many hires from various functions in the company. And in return, we handed back many of our auditors to quite senior positions in the company as well. And I always love having an ex-auditor in those important positions, because they can see with a risk and control lens, and that helps us. So I think also Intact as a company has a very big talent agenda, and they are very used to rotating people to different areas and putting people into their out of comfort zone and supporting them to succeed. So this aligns well with Intact as well. So it is now less frowned upon, but I think that's the way forward.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer, especially with sort of the audit committee chair roles that we deal with, and those people when we're dealing with the senior hires for head of audit roles, etc., that really people do need to have had a stint in internal audit at some stage in their career, and I really do think it's worthwhile. And with insurance and working and being part of a global team, how do you really think sort of internal audit is evolving, and the biggest challenges facing leaders at the moment then?
So I think, like everybody else, internal audit has to keep up with the pace of innovation, particularly on AI, on Gen AI. We need to understand what business is doing and how we upskill to be able to audit those new technologies. It's always about staying ahead of the curve, so we bring value to the organization. So we are pedaling to keep up with the innovation, and our North America team has been more advanced because we have an intact data lab and they have lots of pilots going on AI front. So we are using AI in our audits, and also businesses using AI. So we are looking for ways to become more skilled to audit AI. So that's definitely top of the list on my to learn list as well, to get my head around that. And then it is the emerging risk landscape, understanding what is going to come next unexpectedly to impact us achieving our ambitions as a company, and how we can protect the company in that.
Sure. And how are you using AI in your audits then?
So we have recently had a rollout in the UK, an international team as well. It's the usual things which brings efficiency. So where we can summarize documents, summarize minutes, summarize reports for the audit committee reporting. I never see AI replacing auditors. I see it as an important tool in our toolkit. When we go and start an audit, we have an idea on what the risk is, what the test plan will look like. Challenging that with the tools is quite insightful, because it will come up with things we never thought about and we never tested in the past. So we are playing with it, and we are also continuing to advance on data analytics, because the traditional way of auditing, doing our sample testing, is not where we want to stay. So we are pushing hard to test 100% of the population as well.
Sure. And so therefore, how do you sort of, how can auditors build strong relationships with stakeholders without sort of compromising the objectivity?
So it starts with the purpose again. I always tell everyone that we are here to keep you safe and to support. And I always say it's better coming from us than a customer being harmed or regulator being worried. So once we are clear on the role of the audit and we are here to support and the culture is right, then we can have an open conversation. We need to be very prepared as auditors. Most of the time we go and talk to very experienced actuaries, pricing professionals, and we need to do our homework well to be able to understand what their risks are and what the control strength we expect to see is. So it's that transparency, it's that preparedness definitely helps a lot. Not having a culture where audit is feared upon is obviously a plus. In the past, I've been in places where auditors are scared and everybody's worried about a rating of an audit. That's not the place you need to be. And it starts from the right tone from the top as well, that if there is an adverse audit result, we are not focused on who is responsible, but we are looking into how we can fix this and how we can take learnings from it, so that it's not it doesn't turn to a political game. I think that's very important, to get internal audit in good stance as the trusted advisor to the business.
Sure. And so therefore, with someone with such a deep experience in the field, what do you think sort of, or what has surprised you most about the evolution of internal audit over the last few years, and what do you predict maybe the next surprise will be?
So when we got acquired by Intact and looked into what they do in North America versus what we do here, we found that they were doing real-time reviews, which is change assurance, essentially, over major programs. And to be fair, I was initially hesitant to see what's the value, or are we better off doing business as usual audits? But over time, they won me over, because I could see the value we bring as we run real-time reviews on the programs. And when stakeholders started asking us to join to do real-time reviews over big deliverables, I think we have all seen a project go bad. And when they go bad, they go really bad, cost a lot of money, cost harm potentially to customers. So to mitigate that, to be able to support the business to get it right, is important. And it has been very well received by our stakeholders. In real-time reviews, we do raise audit issues the same way. There's accountability, there is dates, but we do not give ratings or formal audit reports. So it's a very high-paced, agile way of sharing what we find, then fixing it, and just moving on. And I like that culture of not spending ages on landing an audit report and just everybody focused on the right outcome. So that's been, I think, a good thing that happened to us the last couple of years, and going well. What is going to come next? Who knows? I think there is something in artificial intelligence. There is something there. We'll probably see companies fail and learn, because these technologies are so interesting and they are creeping up in many areas now. But I'm not sure how skilled we all are to understand the algorithms behind it, the bias behind these tools, where the information is gathered from, the data aspect. So that's definitely one to watch, because when it's a bit like a black box, we need to be super careful on how it is governed and controlled.
Sure. And just sort of going back to doing real-time audits and being more agile, especially around sort of the projects, how do you build trust with your stakeholders and encourage them to adapt to more sort of proactive approach within risk and audit?
I think everybody sees that companies push hard with difficult playing conditions. So this is almost like the smarter way of providing assurance. Nobody likes when things go wrong. And when we are running major change initiatives with big budgets, it's important to get it right. So we bring that discipline into the program governance, their data governance, and we have quite a established way of looking into what should the project answer, and we are there to support. So, and again, we are very careful not to step into line one control functions or line two toes. So we are collaborating very efficiently. There are projects we choose not to be involved, but we make sure there is no gap within the entity, so that we have an integrated assurance that it is covered and nothing falls between the cracks.
Sure. And what do you think then the challenges are facing or currently facing in terms of skill sets, for example, adapting to industry shifts or staying ahead of technology trends at the moment?
So we are a relatively small audit team compared to banks or large insurers. So we don't have scores of people in the team to enable us to get all the skills we have in-house. For example, if we are doing a climate audit, we don't have a climate expert in-house. So we look to augment the skills we need through getting external insights where needed, or sometimes within the company, as long as we can protect independence from other parts of the business, bringing those skills in. And we use those experts to train our team up to help them ask the right questions. And then we build our small center of excellences. Because we now have a standard methodology across the globe and standard way of working, then if we have a climate expert sitting in Dublin, they can do an audit in the US, because they have the foundations. They can, of course, learn more about the local regulatory structure, but that enables us to utilize the talent we have in a smarter way. Another thing we are doing more of is not a new thing in the industry, but because we have been transforming the business, aligning with Intact, we are now doing more is doing global audits. So we cover the same subject across the board in every country, and bring more insights to the audit committee on how they compare and contrast, where we see good practices and where we see the need for improvement. So those are the ways we try to navigate through the skill gap that we find, and keep building on those emerging risk areas. So we have working groups focused on Gen AI. We have a working group focused on cyber, one on data analytics. So these are the geeks within the team that are passionate about the subject. They take their qualifications, they learn more, and then they present back to the team and share with others as well.
Sure. And we've just sort of briefly mentioned climate, but being a large global organization around ESG, where do you think, are you faced with any challenges, or where do you think the biggest need for an audit will be for this area?
So we have been auditing climate related topics for many years, I think the last 5-6 years. And we have been watching how the business matures, how they set the right governance around these, how they set the right reporting, right appetite. In our audit universe, we have it as a category for us to make sure we cover, and we do it globally, which is super appreciated by management. But also, it's a bit like data analytics. In every audit we do, we ask, what about climate? Because now it's everywhere. If we are doing an expenses audit, we need to ask about, what is your climate consideration on air travel? What's your appetite? What's your policy? And how are you tying the two? Or if we are auditing an underwriting team, again, what is your risk appetite? Are you abiding by it? So we tackle it from both angles and keep up with the regulatory landscape and changes as well.
Sure. And do you think then, as the role of internal audit is changing, do you feel that the skill sets should change as well? Or, you know, what earlier on you mentioned that, you know, you don't believe that, you know, some auditors need to be a qualified accountant, for an example. Do you think it's going to become more on sort of product specialist product areas?
Exactly, I think, and technology and data. So those two will be the skills we look for increasingly in getting new auditors. Auditors should be able to play with data, make sense of it, get patterns and issues from it. So that's one that we have been working on the last couple of years. So that's that, and they don't necessarily need to have the skill when they join the function, but they need to have the growth mindset to build on those skills. Similarly, for AI tools, now that it's trialed and experienced in many audit functions, we are keen to see individuals who have experience in it or who have an interest to learn more about it. And we need to be close to what the business strategy is, where they are focusing on to win, and how we can bring the skills to audit those areas. So it shifts and evolves as the business changes. So our skill set needs to catch up and stay ahead of it, actually, to add value.
Sure. So really you're speaking sort of more on the technical aspect, you know, skills that can be taught. Are there any particular transferable skills or qualities that you think people do need to prioritise to work within internal audit?
Absolutely. I think communication is the first one. And having the strong project management discipline, understanding who your key stakeholders are, when to engage them, and making sure they don't get any surprises at the end of your audit. So that agility in how you run an audit, showing that respect and integrity along the way, is super important. On communication, it is ability to ask questions, ability to get insights, ability to take presence and get to the bottom of the issues with stakeholders, so that when we get to an audit report, everybody sees eye to eye. We are clear on the risk. We are clear on the ratings. We are clear on what needs to be done and the timelines. If we fail on communicating any step of the way, it's the domino effect that it impacts the timelines, it impacts the quality. So that's the two key of course, the integrity is first and foremost. So you need to be open and honest. You need to be asking the difficult questions sometimes and finding ways when you receive pushback and really bringing it back to the risk, bringing back to why it's important, what needs to be fixed is quite important.
And I know that you're very big on diversity. How do you cultivate a culture within your team?
So I'm so lucky. I have a wonderful team, very diverse, very open-minded, with a growth mindset. We do have, we are quite spread across the UK, Ireland, Luxembourg, and we work closely with North America teams. So it's really difficult for us to see each other by the water cooler day in, day out. But what we do is we do have our team summit, so we get together. We do have on-site or off-site meetings to really re-anchor on what we are here for and how we can help the team and how we can make sure we push through our objectives and have fun along the way. So that's how we continue to keep that diversity. I do have coffee chats with each level in the organization and the audit team separately, which turned into a very open forum on forget about titles, what's bugging you, what can we do differently, and let's work on it. Because we are a small team, we are really privileged to make change. If we don't like how we run the audits, let's try something different and see if it works better. We did that as a result of our conversations with the team. We moved to a staggered audit delivery approach so that nobody burns out during the audit committee reporting timelines. And it took a few tries, but we are now in a much better rhythm. And that was done by the auditors in the room. So that was all their ideas on how it best works and their decision. So it was amazing to see. And that's what I mean. I like the diversity because it shouldn't come just from the leadership. It should come ground up. Everybody has perfect ideas and we just need to hear them and see what makes most value to the business and run with them.
And in terms, I know we're talking, you know, COVID is getting further and further away. Have you always had that work from home, adapted that work from home, or was it COVID that instilled that? And is this something that will carry on? Because there are a lot of companies that are now bringing their staff back to work on either a minimum of 3 days in the week or full-time basis. How's that going to work for you?
Yeah, we are adopting return to office as well. So we are in the offices 3 days a week in the UK. We don't see each other as the audit team, but we see our stakeholders. So I think that's a key difference. I've always been a key believer in auditing on the ground. So it's not just auditing behind the desktop, sending a list of questions and then getting answers, because I feel then it becomes quite transactional. We are here also to see the culture, to see what pressures people are under and how we can help. To build the rapport, I feel we need to sit next to the stakeholders. We need to see how they run the business, how they deal with the risks, as opposed to just doing remotely. So our teams are on the road, going to many locations that RSA has and doing the field work there. And then when they're writing their reports, then they are working together as the team, challenging and getting to the outcome in the most efficient way. I think one of the things COVID unfortunately took away from us, that value of face-to-face interaction and building that trust. It doesn't easily happen just through remote working. It really helps when you can walk to somebody's desk and clarify what you're concerned about something. And in the ambitions that Intact has, business has always 100 things to focus on. So as auditors, I think we need to be out there to help them as opposed to just sending emails.
Sure. And just lastly, you've been at RSA for a number of years. I know that you very much enjoy working there. Tell me, what is it that's kept you working for such a great organisation?
I think it's the constant change that I faced since joining RSA. I joined a PLC, which had operations in Denmark, Sweden, Middle East, Canada at the time. And then when the acquisition happened 4 years ago, I changed jobs without changing jobs. So I joined a new company and since then been learning about Intact and their values, their leadership success factors, and their drive on talent, their ambitions. So that kept me busy. There has been some acquisitions and disposals along the way, which is always fun, which keeps us learning, keeps us on our toes. So never had a chance to get bored. I don't know if it will ever come, but really exciting to see the value given to internal audit as well, the place we have in the organization and how we are helping drive the business forward.
And I know that you're a mother in a senior position. How do you manage motherhood in such a senior role? How do you make that work for you?
I always say it's not perfect. I pick my battles day in, day out. I look into what needs my A game now. Is it the work or is it my kids? And I take decisions on that. I have been very focused on time boxing and managing my time and keeping disciplined on that. So that, you know, as auditors, we do timesheets. Like I started doing timesheets 20 years ago. And I kept that because I found it very helpful to see where I am spending my time and how can I extract the most value from the time I spend, either at work or with the kids, because it's the same thing. And I need to be in one or the other. My kids pick that so easily if I'm distracted by my phone and they take my phone away. So I try to protect the personal time. And work-life balance just changes from week to week and from each period in the life cycle of the kids as well. So that's probably what I do. And I always say it's not perfect. Everybody's juggling.
Do you think it's got easier, though, now sort of more people, you know, we want women in bigger positions, you know, at the top table. Do you think life is being made easier for women to be able to do that?
Exactly. I think we have, at least where I work, I have great support and flexibility when I need to be with the kids or when I have personal arrangements to make. And having that trust is really important so that they know I will play my part and I will, if I'm leaving early, then I will pick up at night. So that trust is really important. And more women are finding different ways to juggle. And every family is different. Every dynamic is different. So for each individual, it can't be just moms, it could be people with caring responsibilities, people with long-term health problems, people with learning disabilities. So each individual is different. And the important thing is, how do we support everyone to bring their best self to work and to be open and authentic about it? Because we are very supportive as a company and there are always ways to support.
Yeah. And as we're finishing up this great podcast today, is there any key takeaways or anything that you would, any advice that anybody's given you that you'd like to pass on?
Yeah, I think for me, looking back on my journey so far, it's don't be shy. It's keep asking questions. No question is silly. I feel I lacked a lot of confidence and I still have a big imposter syndrome. But talking to people about it, it showed me that I'm not the only one. Many people face nerves. They have excitement over big meetings, big deadlines. And it's just finding your voice, sharing your opinion, being brave enough to ask questions and to challenge. It has been the biggest thing for me. It doesn't come easily. I think you need to start practicing and get your support network around you to keep building on those skills.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for your time today. It's been absolutely great to speak to you.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.